Welcome everybody to another thrilling episode of HomeKit Insider. You've got me, your hostess with the boastest, Andrew O'Hara, here with my pal Stephen Robles, my co-hostess with the mostest. What's going on, Stephen?
I'm doing well. That was a lot of words ending in EST. I don't even know if I can compete.
Oh, it was a tongue twister. I can't even do it again. One time, one take.
But we are very excited because we have a third person joining us on this week's episode, the co-founder and CEO of Nanoleaf, Jimmy Chu. Jimmy with a G. Thanks for joining us.
How's it going? Thanks for having me on the show, guys.
Absolutely. You have some interesting habits with operating systems and Apple versus PC products. We won't put you on the spot just yet. It comes in a moment.
Yeah, you guys caught me. I probably should have been more mindful that I was on an Apple Insider podcast when I shared with you guys that I'm still on a Windows.
Dude.
But I do have a good reason for it.
Right. You're also recording with the classic, the vintage wired ear pods.
Yeah. I'm on the old school. This one must be at least like a couple generations ago. I got it from my mother-in-law, but
those are the round. Yeah, they're the round ones. They're not even the AirPod shaped ear pods. Those.
Got like the little gray heads.
Extra vintage.
That's amazing.
It's still works though. Good quality stuff.
Yeah, there you go. That's right. The Apple stuff is good quality. I don't know about the computer you're using, but yeah, the AirPods at least for sure. But anyway. Let's hit just a couple quick news bits, and then we can bemoan the loss of HomePod with Jimmy. Acara, just to let you know, released a new smart home lock, actually in mainland China. It's not coming to the U.S. just yet, but Acara, they release a bunch of products, and sometimes they make it over here to the U.S., to the U.K. and all that, and they have a pretty sweet-looking smart lock, almost futuristic-looking, but it does have HomeKit, and so we're always interested in it. But we'll put a link to that and some picture as the chapter art in show notes if you want to check it out. But, man, it's a different-looking smart lock. What do you think about that, Andrew?
You know, I'm glad there's just more smart locks coming.
Yes.
It's interesting to have like a camera integrated into there, and they've always done a good job with their HomeKit support. So I'm interested to see, like, I don't know if it has, HomeKit secure video quite yet, right? So it's just kind of dealing with the Acara servers and all of that. But yeah, it is a very kind of polarizing look to this. Super like sleek metal futuristic looking with that gradient on the front. I feel like you'd maybe have issues fitting the aesthetic of some home/front doors, but hey, I am just happy to see more HomeKit stuff hitting the market.
Then in a new patent that was granted to Apple, it looks like that they may be working into a new area of HomeKit, a modular wall unit system. Basically, where they would put HomeKit kind of behind the plate, I guess. I'm not an electrician, Andrew and Jimmy, just so you know. So I'm not exactly sure. But this is a new category of product.
I think we know this already.
Yeah, I know you. I'm not a pronunciation expert nor an electrician. But it looks like, new category. It's an interesting patent. Again, we'll put a link to the Apple Insider article. But yeah, basically, I guess you can control like electrical current and power from like behind the wall. Is that right?
It's what it seems like, but it also sounds, if I remember this, it's something about sensing as well. So I don't know if it'll be able to detect like occupancy and devices. So we've seen Apple toying around with that motion tracking with like the U1 chip that we keep hearing about with AirTags and hyper precision of devices. So I'm wondering if they'd be able to put something like that into these wall outs, be able to detect devices in rooms that way. So it's kind of an interesting idea.
I believe what they're trying to achieve, and I think that this is a problem that smart home has right now, they're trying to figure out what room are you actually in. And with so many devices that are like just, people are always tied to their phones or their smartwatches. So by putting devices in every single room, you're actually able to triangulate within the house where you're at. So from what I saw from the patent, it seems to be related to that. But, I think Apple's working on all sorts of patents, and a lot of the times they just have cool technology. They're not sure how exactly they're going to release it yet, but I think it's just a sneak preview of what might come later.
If only everyone had a good sounding speaker in every room of their house that could also tell where they were, but unfortunately that will never be the case because Apple has discontinued the large HomePod speaker. There will not be a second generation. We don't know if it's going to be updated. And this is really why we had Jimmy on the episode this week, actually, is because we're going to bemoan the HomePod for the next hour. But Jimmy, did you have one of the larger HomePods?
I do have one. I had one in my office before before COVID hit, so I kind of missed that speaker. I was going to actually bring it home now that it's discontinued.
So Apple basically made a statement saying they're discontinuing the large HomePod. They're going to focus on the HomePod Mini. It's more economical. Surely it has sold more in the short life the HomePod Mini has had than the larger HomePod. As you know, it's $350 for the large HomePod. Sometimes you can get it on sale at like Best Buy for $200, but probably just was not selling like they were hoping. And so they're going to focus on the HomePod Mini. Now, Andrew has some thoughts about people wondering, does this mean HomeKit is going away? Does this mean AirPlay is going away? And like, no, we don't think so. But at least for me, I mean, I have three of the larger HomePods and I love the way it sounded. And I have the HomePod Mini too, and that'll be a great, you know, speaker for a lot of people. But there was something about the sound on a larger HomePod that I think I'm going to miss. Not that they stop working immediately or they'll stop being supported immediately, but I was really hoping for a next gen one with like U1 chip and newer features. So we're not going to get that.
Are you sure that they're not going to release an updated speaker in the future that's at the same sound quality, I guess?
Well, let's see. The last one they released and then discontinued was the iPod Hi-Fi. So while they might in the future, you know, release a different kind of speaker, I feel like we're probably years away from that. And if it wasn't worth it now, even with HomeKit and shortcuts and like the Apple TV integration and being able to use it as a Dolby Atmos virtual speaker and a stereo pair, you know, I feel like I honestly don't really understand because so much was tied into it. And for me personally, I use it for all those things, for HomeKit, for shortcuts, to listen to music, to play from my Apple TV. I throw the audio to my HomePod speakers. So I feel like there's so much reason for it to exist. And if it's still going to be canceled in light of the smaller one, I feel like they're not going to make one, at least at that price point, for a long time at least. I don't know. What do you think, Jimmy?
I think it makes sense in order to kind of support the new, I guess, the new era of smart home. But it kind of boggles my mind. It's just like it makes sense for them to stop manufacturing the first generation, but a second generation one, I'm not sure why they would discontinue it.
All right, Andrew, why don't you give us your tirade on it?
Okay, my little rant. Before we even started recording, before we even called you, Jimmy, I was over here like bemoaning all this to Steven of how like just annoyed I was because it's like Apple, you know, discontinued a product and it seems like everyone started panicking about everything. We had people complaining that, oh no, my HomePod is going to be a brick now, which is obviously not the case. I mean, Apple discontinued AirPort routers how long ago and they're still issuing software updates for those. And they have the HomePod Mini. I mean, when you're looking at AirPort, there's not even anything else in that space that Apple produces. But on the HomePod side, we still have the Mini. So any features, at least certain features that aren't based on hardware, are going to be able to come to both devices at the same time. So we're going to get support for this thing for at least like 5 or so years without pretty much any issue at all, before anything would even become a problem. So the regular HomePods are going to work for a long time. So people can stop whining about that. Then we got people who are worrying that, oh, the big HomePod was killed off, so Apple's clearly going to kill off AirPods Max because those aren't selling anything like crazy. But Apple was likely already planning on nixing the HomePod by the time they were releasing the AirPods Max. Those have barely been out on the market, so they clearly knew what their plans were going to be well enough ahead of time. So I don't think that just because they killed off the HomePod means they're already looking at cutting off the AirPods Max. I mean, they still want to be able to have something in that market. They still want to play in that space, and it is such a better product. There is nothing else like, you know, the AirPods Max in terms of like software features and the connectivity with Apple's own chipsets in there. On the speaker side, there are just so many other speakers that pretty much did the same thing except without that little bit of Apple magic. And I think that HomePod Mini is serving that well enough for most people that it's okay. Yes, it doesn't have the audio quality, but it is such a better product. I mean, it's so much newer. So there's, of course, changes in the hardware. But between the thread support for the smart home, the U1 for handoff is so much nicer on that HomePod Mini than the regular HomePod. You know, that needed to come over there. The HomePod Mini is a faster, more capable speaker, even if it didn't sound as good. So I feel like we could see maybe like a slightly scaled up version, like a, you know, call it a HomePod Max or something. And it's got a similar ball shape, but just slightly bigger. And with all the new features in it, with that better audio quality, and it's able to sense where it is, so it can be used for speakers for Apple TV, all that kind of jazz. But I feel like the original HomePod, its design and all that, is going to go away. But I wouldn't be surprised if another HomePod Mini comes along and HomeKit isn't going anywhere. The AirPods Max are, I think those are going to be fine for a while. Apple knew where those were coming in at the market, and they can't be surprised at how many they're selling of those. So I don't think that's going to be, you know, an issue in the short term, anything like that. But everyone just seems to panic. Like, Apple discontinues one product and everyone is panicking. Everything is ending. Apple's no longer make like high-end products, anything like that. And I think it's just ridiculous.
All right. Well, Jimmy Chu, CEO and co-founder of Nanoleaf, thanks so much for coming on the show. Nanoleaf makes awesome HomeKit products. They have the shapes, the light panels, all this different kind of stuff. And maybe since you're one of the co-founders, Jimmy, can you tell us a little bit about why you and your compatriots started Nanoleaf?
That's a good question. I guess we're actually coming close to our 10-year anniversary. So we started the company. We formally created our first legal entity in 2012. So we're coming up to next year, we're going to be at our 10-year anniversary. So we were just thinking about this. And honestly, when we first started, we didn't care to create a business or anything like that. We just needed to create a legal entity in order to start this Kickstarter campaign. So I don't know if you knew, but we actually started off on Kickstarter.
Oh, wow.
So the three founders, we were all friends from the University of Toronto. We were part of the U of T solar car team. So we were a bunch of students that made a solar car that competed in races with other schools. Hmm. And we just had a passion for developing, cool technology that could hopefully benefit people. And we started off with a solar product, but we didn't know who to sell it to. So we're like, well, let's just keep building stuff. Let's make a really energy efficient light bulb to go with it. Yeah, the very first light bulb that we made ended up being the world's most energy efficient light bulb. And we're like, well, everyone needs a light bulb. Nobody really needs a solar product. So let's just launch that on Kickstarter and see how it goes. So we launched it. Originally, it was called Nano Light. So if you search for Nano Light on Kickstarter, you'll see our campaign. And yeah, that's so we just wanted to make cool products. After that Kickstarter campaign, we kind of got the attention of a couple VCs. At that time, like, startups were all the rage, and everyone, all these VCs were just pouring money into startups. So these VCs found us and were like, hey, let us invest in you guys, and hopefully you guys could build a business out of this. And I remember one of my first questions that I asked them was like, so am I supposed to quit my job now? And they're like, if you got to ask me that, we're in trouble. So it was kind of funny, but, it took us a couple of years. And one of the first things that we started working on was, where do we think lighting was going to go? And it made sense that every light bulb was going to become connected. Naturally, at that time, this was back in around 2014, 2015 timeframe. We started thinking, okay, well, how do we actually make a connected light bulb? And of course, HomeKit was just starting off back in 2015. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, how do we actually find the right person to talk to at Apple to see if we can make HomeKit connected products? I had no idea who to reach out to, and I found on Quora, I found Tim Cook's email.
What?
I was like, So people were talking about like, oh yeah, I emailed Tim Cook and he responded or whatever. I was like, well, heck, it's worth a try, right? And it was like a couple days from Christmas, and we were just getting ready to go to CES to see what's going on. So I was like, I got nothing to lose. I'm going to send Tim Cook an email. And the following week, he actually responded, and he connected me with some senior VP that connected me to a VP that connected. Eventually, it kind of trickled down to the right level. And they arranged a meeting with me at CES just to, in like the coming weeks. And from there, we actually learned, okay, here's the process to start working with Apple. Here's the MFI process. Here's how you actually become a partner. And that was kind of the beginning of how we became, went from going doing a Kickstarter project to actually creating a connected product with Apple HomeKit.
Well, let me ask you this. Did you go to HomeKit first, or did you kind of look at all the smart home stuff out there and chose HomeKit, or was it one of a few that you were working on all at the same time?
Well, at that time in 2015, it wasn't really clear what was going on, right? So
fair.
HomeKit seemed to be the most mature, and we were actually striving to become the first HomeKit-enabled smart bulb. Uh-huh. And, we lost to Philips. Philips released their product about a month before us, but of course their stuff was RGB. Our product was, at the time, it was a white-only bulb. So this was before we actually released panels. But we were also looking at, what was Google doing? What was Android doing? And, at that time, they were doing stuff like Google Weave, and it was just nothing really came out yet. But yeah, we built everything off of HomeKit, and it created the foundation of all of our products. And it also built a really good relationship with Apple, because, from there, we were one of the few, one of the early partners with Apple HomeKit, and you know that got us a meeting with their retail team. And even though they didn't stock our bulbs at the time, eventually when we created our panel products, they were intrigued and they were like, "Hey, let's try this out at the Apple stores." And you know, for us, for a startup, that was a dream come true.
Now, a lot of people probably know Nanoleaf from your panels. I mean, those are like your big ones. Those are in the back of seemingly every single gamer online. But recently, and what we've talked about quite a bit on the show, is your new Essentials line, which of course has Thread alongside HomeKit baked in, and at the moment is an exclusive through the Apple Store. How did that happen? How did the Essentials line come to be, and how did you snag that spot in Apple stores, especially at such a good price point? I mean, these are really quite affordable.
Yeah, so that whole project started, I would say, like about a year and a half ago. So this was around the end of 2019. At that time, we were already thinking we needed to get into the bulb business. Mainly, we needed to create, I'm not sure if you're aware, but we're going into lighting controls with something that we're calling the Learning Series. And as part of that, well, we need endpoints to control. So we needed more than panels. We needed bulbs. We need light strips. We need light fixtures. And this was kind of our vision for what we called the Nanoleaf Essentials. When we first started talking to Apple about it, you know, we shared with them some of our challenges that we faced with standards. Right, there was Zigbee, there was Wi-Fi, there was Bluetooth, and at the time we were like, none of these technologies really, they all had like shortcomings, and we were leaning towards something called Bluetooth Mesh, which was actually a little bit better for lighting, but it still wasn't perfect. I think the main thing with Bluetooth Mesh was that it was going to be much more reliable, and it was meant for a lot more devices than just Bluetooth, or it didn't have some of the issues with Zigbee and Wi-Fi. When we told them that we were creating bulbs and light strips, they were like, actually, this is actually a perfect opportunity to share with you what one of the new things that we're, one of the new initiatives that we have, which at the time was Thread. We were completely caught by surprise because, you know, I think Thread was something that everyone had talked about for years, but it never really became a reality. And I think that the missing part was, you know, Apple didn't actually vocalize that they were going down that path and supporting it. You know, Thread was a standard that was, spearheaded by the folks at Google, and it's built into a lot of Google's Nest devices, but it wasn't really like widely adopted. And I think what we needed really was Apple to commit to using Thread in order for the industry to go down that path. So for us, we changed gears really quickly. We stopped doing what we were doing with Bluetooth Mesh, and we decided to just rejig everything to work with Thread. And we ended up launching a couple of months later. You know, we wanted to align it with, when Apple was planning to launch their Thread product. Of course, Apple being Apple, they didn't actually tell us what they were launching, and we had no idea that they were launching a HomePod Mini. Both sides had to just build to spec, and we had to send our bulbs to them to test because they didn't give us access to iOS 12 that supported Thread. Hmm. So it was interesting, but it was definitely a great partnership, and we got things working really quickly, and so far it seems to be working really well.
Well, I actually just recently got one of your A19 bulbs. They were $20 on the Apple Store, which it was just an awesome deal, especially no hub needed. You get a smart light bulb and it changes colors and all that. And I was curious, what are some of the things that you have either researched or looked into or have found about color and maybe mood and even productivity? Now we have adaptive lighting, which the Nanoleaf products, many of them support as well. And the bulb I got works with that too. So what has your been experience with colors and that kind of stuff? And how important is that for people's work?
I think for people's work, white light is probably still going to be the baseline. You know, I think white light is basically the full spectrum of light, really, given to you. Whereas, I think the colors end up being more accents. And so, when you use our bulb, you'll notice that we actually put a lot of care into the white light that it emits. So everything from like a cool white to a warm white is extremely bright and accurate. And really the science is based around like how humans have evolved, right? Like humans have evolved to to be under natural light, which goes, you know, and if you think about the sky, right, like when the sun is rising, when the sun is setting, you get the different shades of white because of how the light kind of refracts through our ozone layer and all the clouds. So you get, you know, like the warm whites throughout the morning and the evening, and you get the cool whites more throughout like the day when the light is brightly overhead. So I think that like that is just evolution saying that, hey, circadian lighting makes a lot of sense, and being able to bring that inside is really good. Where the colors come into play is really to create kind of accents and other moods to, like, you know, like if you just want to kind of hang out in a little gamer layer, I think that that's a pretty common use case. You know, I have a scene that I love, which is called like Starry Nights. It's based on like the Starry Nights painting. Mm. And I just have a bunch of bulbs that just kind of go through the blues and the yellows in a really like a dark setting. And it just helps me to kind of chill. But yeah, I think it's different for everybody. With our light panel product, I think that was much more evident because, you know, you could create a much bigger surface of light. So it kind of creates like this window effect. And I know a lot of people that just, in order to really energize themselves, they just put it the bright white light.
Yeah.
You know, all of our panels. And it's something that we don't necessarily market to the fullest extent, but it's a very good use case for light. Like, especially think about COVID, right? Everyone's stuck at home all day long, especially during wintertime. It's really depressing. Mm. But then if you have, like, my little brother, he has a wall of, like, 30 panels just right in front of his computer, and he has it on a schedule of white light. Yeah, it's just white light. And you know, I experienced it at his house. I was like, this actually feels good. You know, like, throughout the day, I feel really energized. At nighttime, it automatically dims down, and it's it makes a lot of sense.
Wow.
Going back a little bit to the Essentials line again, because I'm essentially obsessed with them, which mini tangent about this is probably the coolest packaging I've seen on a smart home product. I love the way the outer slip cover, which is basically white, has all those cutout portions like on the sides of the bulb that reveal all the vivid colors that's on the box below it. It's a great effect and an unboxing experience. But also, when you do open them, it talks about the Essentials line being just the beginning. Where do you see the Essentials line going?
That's a really good question. That was kind of like an Easter egg that we put into the packaging.
Oh, I saw it. I saw it right away.
So when we say that, you know, and this is something that we alluded to during our recent keynote and CES last year, we've been working on something called the Learning Series. And this is where it introduces a lot of sensors and automation and intelligence into controlling lights. So this is where, you know, where we believe like smart lighting is really lacking. It's like when people think about smart lighting, they think about a bulb that connects through Wi-Fi or Bluetooth that they could, you know, connect to their phone and they could use, or maybe they could use their voice assistant to turn it off. But that's not actually smart. That's just like, really, it's a glorified remote control for your light. And there's no intelligence, there's no automation to tie to it. Sure, you might be able to run a schedule, but that's not smart. Like, it's just like, that's like the basics of smart lighting kind of thing. It's like, what we really need is a light that turns on for you, and it turns off when you're not using it, and it puts it to the right light setting. So when I think of smart light, I think of, like, you know, a little fairy that flies around and just kind of turns on and off the lights for you, and you just don't have to think about it anymore. And with the Learning Series, that's where we're trying to get to. So with the Essentials products, that's kind of, this is the essential aspect of it. Like, we need lighting products to control. There's intelligence that will need to interact with these products. And this is something that we've been working hard for several years to build towards. Of course, it's not yet on the market. It's not yet ready. But this is where we believe the future of lighting needs to be.
I remember going through CES last year, not 2021, but 2020, when people could see other humans in person at large events like that. I remember going through and seeing a demo of your upcoming Learning Series, and it was very neat, but also a little bit abstract at exactly what it was doing or which was doing like the thinking and processing, and it was a little hard to describe, but I'm very curious to see where that ends up and how that self-contained system can play with the larger ecosystem such as HomeKit.
So I wouldn't call it a self-contained system, because it would definitely work with HomeKit. Like, we everything that we do closely with Apple. And so, like, all of the commands that we issue to lights, like, even in, when you interact with our app, all it's really doing is sending HomeKit commands to our products.
Wow.
So with the learning series, it's not going to be very different. Like, when a control gets issued, it's going to be a HomeKit command. So we're working really closely with Apple on, you know, how to actually integrate some of the sensor technology, some of the automations in there. And that way, it doesn't matter if you're controlling it with your HomePod Mini, or if you're controlling it with the Nanoleaf app, or if you're controlling it with a Home app, it would all be kind of tied together. Our hope is that it would take it to another level and actually make your life a little bit easier and make it so that you don't actually have to manually do so much. It could actually introduce some of the automations in there.
This episode is brought to you by Jamf Mobile Device Management. Guys, I've been using Jamf for years now, and I personally love the service and the power it gives me to manage Apple devices across a large team. And whether you have just a few people or lots of devices you need to manage, Jamf is an excellent tool to make those management tasks a lot easier. I actually use it with 50 plus devices across an organization, both iPhones, iPads, and Macs, iMacs and MacBooks alike. Listen, Apple, Microsoft, and Google, they'll have unique workflows to provision, encrypt, deploy, and support enterprise technology. That's why there really is no such thing as a unified endpoint management or just a single tool to cover everything. But as Apple devices become more and more popular and grow in organizations, a lot of places even doing bring your own devices. So people are bringing their own iPhones and iPads. The need to provide Apple dedicated tools for IT and security teams has never been greater. Jamf is the only Apple enterprise management solution that covers everything you need to connect, manage, and secure Apple devices for your organization without negatively impacting the end user experience. And that's an important point, because sometimes with some management softwares, it'll slow down devices or they may freeze with the different profiles of provisioning, and I have never experienced that with Jamf. And it doesn't even require the IT department to touch a device. You can deploy a shrink-wrapped Apple device straight from the factory to your staff, wherever they are, and when it arrives and they unbox it, power it on, they can get right to work with all the apps, settings, and resources they need to be productive and stay secure. Jamf makes access to business-critical applications a seamless experience with a single username and password. Just imagine the reduction in password resets for your IT team. Finally, while most security tools are created with Windows in mind, you can be assured that Jamf's sole focus is on protecting your Macs. And with a history of same-day support for Apple OS releases, your devices will be secure no matter when your users update. More than 40,000 organizations rely on Jamf to keep devices connected, up-to-date, and secure, while ensuring users have the resources they need and the world-class Apple experience they know, love, and expect. So Apple Insider listeners, unlock the power of Apple and Jamf today with a free 14-day trial. Try totally for free. And to get started, go to jamf.it/Apple Insider. That's jamf.it/Apple Insider to learn more. Our thanks to Jamf for sponsoring this episode. So are you guys looking into any new product categories, lighting or otherwise? Or if not that, do you wish that HomeKit maybe supported a different category that you guys are interested in?
Well, I think the next major one is around sensors and controls. Mm-hmm. And HomeKit does support them. So it's just, are we able to work together to have that experience tie closer together? I think that that's going to be an important factor. And usually with Apple, they've been very flexible with working with us. Like, I'll give you an example. With our light panels, we had huge amounts of scenes. And actually, like, we introduced them as HomeKit scenes, so that when you triggered a scene, it creates a scene within HomeKit, and it actually triggers it that way. But it became a challenge with our products, because sometimes users create like 50 scenes, and then all of a sudden their HomeKit app is flooded with like 50 different scenes. So, you know, we work with them to actually modify things a little bit, so that even though we can still use scenes, it'll only show up in HomeKit if they're favorited. You know, these are little things that we work together to make sure that the experience is actually really good. And with the sensors and with some of the lighting controls, these are things that, you know, we're going to continue to work towards for the next probably couple of years. You know, it takes a long time to actually really perfect how the experience should be for customers.
It's really impressive to see how you could get those scenes to work natively in HomeKit. For anyone who isn't familiar with these light panels, the entire piece, the entire, like, you know, product shows in HomeKit as one light, but each panel can technically be a different color. And if you try to change it through the HomeKit or the Home app or Siri, it just changes all the panels to that one color. But like you said, you can create and design in the Nanoleaf app, and then it'll save and show inside of HomeKit. And you can include it in any scenes or automations that you want, even though Apple doesn't, like, natively allow you to set multiple colors for one light. Again, really nice work. I like that a lot as I was reviewing these early on. And by the way, I am totally going to expose you guys. When I was at CES, I learned that all of your freaking product images are renderings. Because it's nearly impossible to take a good photo or video of your products. And I was talking to somebody there on your team. It's been a while, so I can't, like, exactly remember. Was that you?
You were talking to me. Oh, my gosh.
Well, it's been a while, and it's been on my mind since we talked. Because I just remembered seeing how good your product shots were. And I remember wondering if you guys had some tricks. And it turns out the trick was, oh, we just use renders. So to be fair, they do look that good in person. But man, it was driving me crazy.
It's the fundamental way that, like, photography works, right? There's a shutter that captures light. And usually, you know, you have a flash to shine light on the object that you're trying to focus on and you're trying to, like, capture. But when the object is light, it just messes with the exposure, it messes with everything. So you cannot get a good photo of, you know, it's like your eyeball, it's able to process that image of what it really looks like in such a different way from a camera that it's really difficult to, like, actually capture a picture of it. And we've tried, like, hiring, like, different photographers to take photos of our products. We've tried, there's cameras that have, like, varying shutter speeds, so that instead of just shuttering at a consistent speed, it'll have, like, a variety of speeds in order to try and capture a picture of these things, and it's impossible. So we've given up.
I love it. I spent so much time working on it. Like, I tried adjusting the brightness of the lights and tweaking my shutter speed for photos, changing the frame rate on the video, and it was just always a struggle. The one photo I got that legitimately looks good. It appears that the lights are, like, the Nanoleaf lights are on in a near pitch black room, but it's absolutely in the middle of the day in a bright studio. And somehow, just the way that I was tweaking my camera, probably just going crazy, it just appeared that the room was completely dark with the lights on. And it was, like, the one photo of those lights that I got that looked very solid.
So, a personal question for me. So I've been browsing your site as you're talking. There's also a defunct HomePod in a lot of your product pictures, just so you know. So I have the Essentials bulb, which I mentioned before, but I actually did not have any of your shapes or panels. And so I'm now looking, you have your shapes, which are, you know, I guess you can kind of get different shapes to plug into whatever panels you have. You have your light panels, which are the triangle shapes that you can, you know, extend and make into other things. And then you have canvas. Now, if I don't have any of the panels, canvas, or shapes yet, but I want to get into it maybe for a new office or something, where should I start with all that?
The shapes is the newest lineup. All the new shapes products, they're all interoperable. So there's the hexagons, the shapes triangles, and the shapes mini triangles. So you could actually mix and match those products. And I would say that that's our third generation of light panel products. So the original light panels, and it used to be called Aurora, but then we ran into some trademark issues. that was kind of our first product, our first claim to fame. And I think it's super cool, but they only supported up to 30 panels in a single setup. From there, we went to Canvas. Now, the Canvas support, that's the square panels. Mm-hmm. What we were trying to achieve there was kind of edge-to-edge illumination so that there was no, like, dark corners. So with the square panels, you'll notice that
right.
It doesn't have dark corners, but you do see kind of a crosshair in the middle of it, and that was just how we got the optics to work. That one supported up to 500 panels, so you could actually do, like, an entire wall of these lights. Now, the Shapes product line is kind of the best of all worlds. It's got connectors that connect different types of shapes together. It supports up to 500 panels. Each panel is touch activated, so you could play games on it. You could set up, I guess, HomeKit buttons for each of the panels in order to like trigger HomeKit scenes with the touch of a panel. You could have it interact with the actual scenes themselves. So sometimes like you could create like a sort of like a flutter effect where when you touch one panel, it'll just kind of ripple the light across all the other panels. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So with that though, none of your current panel products support Thread. So only your Essentials line so far supports Thread. So should Steven be getting into these panels without Thread support?
Mm. Well, I think Thread is like there's first of all, there is a Thread radio into that product. There are plans that we have for how we want to utilize Thread. It's just not yet enabled. So you'll hear more from us on how we're going to actually utilize that Thread radio. But at the same time, Thread, you know, it's meant for like when you have numerous devices and you want to create like a mesh setup. With our panels, it only requires a single controller for all those panels. So it's not like, so the Wi-Fi connectivity actually works fine. So we do have the Thread radio within each of these controllers, and we will, we're going to announce formally probably in the next few months how we're going to utilize that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like I think Thread and Wi-Fi, there's a place for each of these, and they serve kind of different purposes.
Sure.
I think one of the huge benefits of Thread is around like the energy usage. So for low energy products, it makes a lot of sense for products that should not require boot up time. So light bulbs, for example, as soon as you flip the switch, it's rebooting, right? Like if you turn it off, turn it on. Mm-hmm. With our light panels, we run like a light powered Linux on there. Mm. So it's, you know, it takes a good 10, 20 seconds in order to boot up. So the good thing about them is they're always powered on. They're just turning off the lights, if you get what I mean.
I guess I shouldn't be surprised that you have Thread hardware in there that perhaps may be tapped into one day in different ways, but I feel like I shouldn't be surprised. You guys have done that before, including the additional hardware that you activated later. I remember in some of the early stuff, you had the motion sensors baked in and didn't announce it, and then all of a sudden one day it just showed up as a beta feature.
Yeah, that was kind of our first stab at doing motion sensing within our products. So we had that in the rhythm module for one of our first light panels. Mm-hmm. But it started interfering with people's 5 gigahertz network, so we had to disable that.
I love that. I really do.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a screw up. And it wasn't everyone, but it was enough to be like, you know, it was a 10 gigahertz Doppler radar that was able to sense motion. And it was able to sense motion either coming towards or away from the rhythm module, and we were hoping to enable like occupancy sensing in order to turn on or off the light panels for you. But because the Doppler radar was interfering with the 5 gigahertz networks, we were just like, it's not worth screwing up someone's Wi-Fi and having them all confused about what was going on. So we gave a warning before someone activated it. And then, you know, they were able to deactivate it as well.
Well, Jimmy, you alluded to you have a HomePod and you've used that. And obviously you have HomeKit, but your products also work with Alexa and Google Home and all that. So what do you use in your home to control all your stuff? You have a HomePod, but do you have one of each speaker? I know you were talking about how you are operating system fluid and like to try them all.
So going back to that, there's a reason why I use Windows. So I'm using the Razer Blade laptop. I do really like
that. That is a very cool one.
Yeah, it's and I'll admit I am a bit of a gamer, so it kind of hits the spot for me. But yeah, I like to switch operating systems every cycle. And part of the reason for it is like I think like a few years ago I went from like iOS to an Android device and I was like so frustrated. I was like, how do you do all this stuff? And that feeling of like not liking change.
Right.
I felt like I was getting old. I was just like, I'm not curious about new technology anymore. And I'm getting set in my ways. And as you know, like one of the things that I love most about Nanoleaf is being involved with product design. So when you're set in these ways, it just kind of like influences your design decisions and it's not a good way to be. Hmm. So what I try to do is I switch back and forth. Right now I'm using an iPhone. So I love using HomeKit because just our products are so closely tied with HomeKit. And also out of the three platforms, it's the most local technology.
Right.
Right. So when you think about like all the Google Home integrations, all the Alexa integrations, all that stuff is happening through the cloud.
Right.
So if internet's out, then you know you're SOL. And also, like, the way that HomeKit ties with your iPhone, just that little shortcut screen, that's like the best way to control your HomeKit products. It's like right there. Hmm. And Siri, of course, is just, it's so convenient. It's just, I feel like the voice assistants that have come out, the Google Home voice assistants and the Alexa voice assistants, those, they've done a great job marketing them and positioning them as like, this is smart home. But in reality, the underlying technology, I think that because HomeKit has spent so many years creating that kind of local infrastructure, that's just really strong. Mm-hmm. And so that's my method of choice, like using the, I don't know what to call it. Like, it's like on the iPhone when you kind of scroll down from the top right corner.
Control center.
Yeah, the control center is my favorite way to control. Yeah, I don't actually like using voice assistants that much. I find it weird talking to myself.
We did, you'll have to go back later and listen to it, but I'm pretty sure a few weeks back we did this spot that someone wrote in about and how you could set up different responses for Siri through shortcuts. So when she responds to you,
right,
it's a different phrase almost every time. So she doesn't say, a scene is set. Each time, it's a random phrase every time, almost every time,
actually,
that you issue a command. And it makes it feel a little less like you're talking to yourself.
Yeah, your HomePod could say, why are you using an Android phone, Jimmy? You can program it to say that too.
I do like how on the Google platform, you can set different accents for the Google Assistant. That gets kind of funny.
You can do that on HomeKit, on Siri.
Yeah,
I mean,
you
might be more limited.
I find that hilarious, but
I like to feel like 007, so mine's a British person.
Yeah, it's kind of cool, right?
British accent. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm pretty sure ours is on an Irish accent, which, come on, it is perfect for, you know, March and St. Paddy's Day.
Oh, there you go. That's right.
I used to have an old, I think it was like TomTom, the GPS, where you could load up different voices. So I'm pretty sure there was like a Homer Simpson's one who would, you know, guide you through your navigation and stuff. There was a bunch of like celebrity voices that you can put on there, and that was pretty cool.
That definitely makes it more fun to talk to these voice assistants, but for the most part, I just find it weird. It's like a want to just talk to computers. I don't know. I think like when the brain sensing stuff comes out, that's going to be fun, but we're not there yet.
Yeah.
Hopefully Elon brings us there.
Hey, there you go.
A couple little ones here. I wanted to first know, what is the coolest Nanoleaf panel installation you've seen? And I don't mean one that you guys created for CES or something like that, because those are already legit, but a customer-created Nanoleaf installation. And then one thing after that.
So recently, there was a little partnership that we did with, there's a new Jurassic Park show that's going on, so we did a campaign with them. And they created a dinosaur with our Shapes product line.
Whoa.
And so we called that dinosaur, like Rexy, and it's awesome. I want to recreate that in my house. Let me see if I can find it on Instagram, but I'm sure it's on Instagram somewhere. But it's a little dinosaur with combination of hexagons, triangles, mini triangles, and it really looks like a dinosaur. And then there's like these families that have like recreated it within their homes, and they posted like little images and videos of their kids playing around with it, and yeah, it looks really epic. That one's really it's really cute, I guess. Like,
I adore the new Shapes. I do. The ability to combine the hexagons, triangles, and mini triangles, it's very nice. I definitely felt more limited by the original Aurora, and you know, I'll be honest, I have a box of the new Shapes and everything, and I've like played with them, but I have not put them, I have not mounted them in our new house yet, because I cannot commit to a design. Like, I want to put something up, I really do, and I want to put it up in the new studio, but I'm like, am I going to change my mind? I'm going to mount it and then decide I want to do something else, and then I can't really change it. So I just keep going back and forth on what I want to do, but I just can't commit to do anything with it, and it's just, oh my gosh. I'm seeing these come in, by the way. Like, sorry, listeners, you cannot see this, but I'm seeing these messages come through while we're recording, and there's a Rexy just looks adorable. And there's also a baby Yoda, a Grogu, that is almost as good. These are so cool. I love it. I was totally with the idea of mounting mine onto a board, like plywood or something, so I could have the option to take it down and change it later, and I didn't have to like 100% commit. But then I could at least put something up here in the new studio that we, you know, finished building at the end of last year.
They're really cool, but like you said, you got to commit, right? And I think that that's kind of a hard thing, right? Like when we were originally thinking about it, we thought it would be really cool if you could remove them and kind of rearrange them as you please. We've actually experimented with having like magnetic panel, like plates at the back, mounting plates at the back, so that you could actually easily rearrange them. Mm. But for now, yeah, it's installed with double-sided tape, so there's some level of commitment that you need to do. With the Shapes product, we actually like made some improvements so that, you know, when you're removing it, it's really easy to remove and it doesn't screw up your walls. But yeah, I think there's a group of people that love sitting there and thinking about what design to make. And there's a group of people, and I'm part of the second group of people that just wishes that it was already on the wall and I didn't have to do anything.
I totally agree. I want this cool design, but I can't pick one. And I mean, you guys have done a lot, because isn't there like an AR way in the app to like visualize what it's going to be before you put it on your wall?
Yeah, it's really cool. Our product team is awesome. They used the Apple's AR kit, and we did it using that, and we thought it was going to be a cool experiment to do. And yeah, I think they're working on like tying it in with our shop, so you could, you know, you could kind of create Rexy on your wall using AR, and then you could actually buy the whole package from our website. But it's I think there's so many different design possibilities. And actually, one of our customers told me that one of the things that he loves about our product is that the design process starts when you get home. It's like when you get home with that product, then you could kind of play around with it on your floor and actually play around with configurations. And it's like you get to personalize it, and you got to like, it's like fun again. It's like Lego for adults, which, yeah, it's really cool. It really allows people to like kind of like be creative. And then like once you put it on the wall, then it's around like, well, what colors do you want? What do you want it to do? How do you want it to react to music, for example? How do you want to configure it? It's like when we think about making products, it's really about like, how do we actually spark joy in people's lives? You know, how do we bring a smile on people's faces when they see it? And that's like, we really strive for that. You know, like if you think about like how our panels work with music, we spent so much time and money on that project. And I remember thinking like, you know, as a small startup, I'm allocating all of our top resources to making it so that these lights dance to music. I'm like, this is ridiculous, right? It's literally like millions of dollars in R&D to developing lights that dance to music. I'm like, man, worth it. Awesome.
That's real, though. People want that.
Well, because like the easy way would just be, oh, use the mic from your phone and pipe it to your panels, and you'll get that, like, I don't know, 50 milliseconds of lag. Yo, that's 50 milliseconds too much.
Yeah, you want that.
You know, like that's just like, we needed it real time. We needed to feel the music when it like goes through your light panels. So we invested a lot, and there's a lot of really cool math that's involved with that. Like, yeah, it was a lot of fun to do. You know, it makes people happy when people see like listen to music to it. Like, and that's part of the reason why there's so many streamers, right? There's a lot of like online DJs that have it in their background, because it just makes it easy for them. You don't need to run any software. Just turn on the light panels and set it to the music sync mode, and you're good to go.
Switching away from lights almost completely here, I wanted to ask you about the NanoLeaf remote. The NanoLeaf remote, I feel like it does not get enough attention because your other products are so flashy, like literally flashy, but the NanoLeaf remote is a very cool and interesting device. It's also the only HomeKit button/remote that has more than 3 commands, which is what all the others seem to do. So tell us about the NanoLeaf remote, and for anyone unfamiliar, it's a fairly good-sized die, like a baseball-sized die, 12-sided, a dodecahedron, and you can rotate it to any side, and that side is like the scene that's set, and as you do it, it provides haptic feedback, and it lights up, and if you rotate it clockwise, it increases the brightness, counterclockwise, it'll dim those lights. It's very neat, but tell us how that came to be, and how it's the only device, seemingly in HomeKit, that can do 12 different button remote commands.
That was also a cool project as well. That was one of those things that I thought was really interesting. I think the 12 sides was a little bit much. I think we could have probably kept it like a cube, so 6 sides. And
I'm pretty sure you guys just wanted to say dodecahedron a whole bunch, and that was literally the driving factor. That's my guess.
It was a big part of our brand identity. So if you look at what our very first light bulb looked like, it was based off of a dodecahedron. A dodecahedron is a platonic solid. It's one of the 5 platonic solids, which means every side is the same shape. So every side is, I believe, a pentagon. And then every internal angle is the same. So, it, like, if you squeeze it, it's sort of like an egg where it's, like, structurally solid.
Whoa.
So we love the dodecahedron.
You just blew my mind. Sorry, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's only, like, five platonic solids. Like a cube is one, a tetrahedron is another, dodecahedron is another, and then there's some, like, icosahedron or whatever, but they get a little bit too crazy. But, yeah, like, that product was really, really cool. But we know that lighting controls can't be that expensive, so we tried to keep it as cheap as possible. I think it originally retailed for $50, and I can't remember what the price is now. We might have dropped it to $30. And yeah, like, if you flip it to a different side, it sets a scene. And with our light panels, it made a lot of sense because there's, you know, all sorts of scenes that you could program. But you could also rotate it to dim it down, like rotate it to the left, rotate it to the right. It had like gyroscopes, accelerometers all built in there to process all of that. And it was particularly challenging to do it for 12 different sides. But it was fun. And I think that, like, it definitely brought a smile to people's faces. Like, whenever people tried it out for the first time, they're like, oh my God, this is so cool. I do want to do a refresh on that product. It's too early to say whether we're going to do that or not yet. But it's a fun product. It's a fun product. We had some challenges around, like, incrementing the brightness, because, like, setting a scene and like, incrementing brightness when it comes to smart home products is a little bit challenging. Usually you kind of set the brightness from one brightness to another. So you could say set it to 10%, set it to 20%. But whenever you're, like, issuing commands like brighten it by 10%, like that command isn't necessarily supported by, like, HomeKit. And also, like, really, like, HomeKit, primarily it's like, hey, set a scene. Right, which we do. So there was a couple challenges associated to it. But yeah, it's definitely a really cool product, and we probably don't market it enough. Yeah, one of our design mottos is to create products that don't exist on the market today. And so our light panels are like that. Our that remote that you're talking about is definitely something like that. We never saw a remote like that on the market. And then what we did with the Essentials product line, like, we probably would not have done it if there wasn't the opportunity to innovate with Thread. So with Thread, we really believe that this is, like, the future direction of where a smart home needs to go. And so, you know, for us, like, dedicating our resources to developing something innovative, especially, you know, alongside Apple, it just made a lot of sense to us.
Very cool. Well, Jimmy, thank you so much for coming on HomeKit Insider and letting us interview you. Where would you direct people if they're looking for your products? So much of your stuff is so popular, sometimes it's hard to find in stock. But if they can go anywhere, where would you send people?
Definitely the Apple Store and nanoleaf.me.
Yeah, I like how you have the in the page title in the HTML. Like, if you look in the tab when you go to nanoleaf.me, it has a little special message. It's always nice to see the little touches in the web. Very cool. Well, listeners, let us know what you think about Nanoleaf. If you have questions, or hey, we'd love to interact with you. If you have any questions about your HomeKit products, we'll be answering a ton of listener questions next week, kind of like we did on last week's episode. So stay tuned for that. Keep sending your questions in. You can tweet at Andrew and myself. Our Twitter handles are in the show notes. Don't forget to give HomeKit Insider a 5-25 star rating in Apple Podcasts. We greatly appreciate everyone who does that. And don't forget to check out Apple Insider Daily. Get the top Apple headlines in just a few minutes. And the Apple Insider podcast comes out every Friday as well. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next time.